I invite you to turn to Luke chapter 8. Luke chapter 8, beginning with verse 40. The text begins with the phrase, "Now when Jesus returned." You recall last Sunday, we looked at Jesus went across the Sea of Galilee to the east side. There was a man demon-possessed. When Jesus asked what his name was, he said, "Legion." And you remember Jesus cast out the demons, and they requested of Jesus that they not be sent directly to hell. That's their request. Don't send us to the abyss quite yet. And so they were cast. They said, "Can we go into this herd of pigs?" 2,000 of them. And you remember the story. These pigs panicked, filled with demonic spirits, and they plunged over the cliff into the sea. And the people there in that country said, "We just as soon you left and went back to the other side where you came from." And so he does. He leaves them alone. And that's what the first phrase of our text is referring to. He and the disciples sail back to the other shore. It says, "Now when Jesus returned, the crowd welcomed him, for they were all waiting for him. And there came a man named Jairus, who was a ruler of the synagogue. And falling at Jesus' feet, he implored him to come to his house, for he had an only daughter about 12 years of age, and she was dying. As Jesus went, the people pressed around him. And there was a woman who had had a discharge of blood for 12 years, and though she had spent all her living on physicians, she could not be healed by anyone. She came up behind him and touched the fringe of his garment, and immediately her discharge of blood ceased. And Jesus said, 'Who was it that touched me?' When all denied it, Peter said, 'Master, the crowds surround you and are pressing in on you.' But Jesus said, 'Someone touched me, for I perceive that power has gone out from me.' And when the woman saw that she was not hidden, she came trembling and falling down before him, declared in the presence of all the people why she had touched him and how she had been immediately healed. And he said to her, 'Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace.' While he was still speaking, someone from the ruler's house came and said, 'Your daughter is dead. Do not trouble the teacher anymore.' But Jesus, on hearing this, answered him, 'Do not fear, only believe, and she will be well.' And when he came to the house, he allowed no one to enter with him except Peter and John and James and the father and mother of the child. And all were weeping and mourning for her, but he said, 'Do not weep, for she is not dead, but sleeping.' And they laughed at him, knowing that she was dead. But taking her by the hand, he called, saying, 'Child, arise.' And her spirit returned, and she got up at once. And he directed that something should be given her to eat. And her parents were amazed. But he charged them to tell no one what had happened." Wherever Jesus goes, he brings transformation. Fishermen leave their nets. Sick people are made well. Storms are stilled. Demons are cast out. The hungry are fed. Sinners are forgiven. And the dead are raised. Wherever Jesus goes, he brings transformation. And as you well know, the four Gospels are replete with many, many accounts, wonderful accounts, of the compassion of Christ, wonderful accounts of his transforming power. And the good news of the New Testament, the good news that I proclaim to you this morning, is that the transforming power of the risen Christ is still active today. Jesus is still in the business of changing lives and meeting needs. But there's one critical question. How does this wonderful transforming power of Jesus invade your life and mine? How does that life-changing power described here in this text, how does it become a reality in your experience and my experience? The answer can be summed up in one dynamic word, and it's the word faith. And so I've entitled the message this morning, Faith Alone. Did you notice the text? To the woman who was ill for 12 years, what does Jesus say in verse 48? Daughter, your faith has made you well, Jesus says. To Jairus, whose daughter had just died, what does Jesus say to him? This is in verse 50. Do not fear, only believe. He had come to Jesus in faith. Now his daughter has died. Jesus says, don't quit believing. Keep trusting. Faith alone. And you know, the beautiful thing about our passage is that what Luke teaches us is that when it comes to our circumstances in life, when it comes to our background, our circumstances, our background mean absolutely nothing one way or another when it comes to experiencing the grace and mercy of Christ. Do you notice these two individuals in the text, how radically different they are? Let's start with Jairus. Jairus was a male, which in those days was a big deal 2,000 years ago. If you were a man 2,000 years ago, you had rights and privileges that women could only dream of. They did not possess. And so he's a male. He has a prestigious position in the community. You notice verse 41, he is a synagogue ruler. Perhaps he was the synagogue ruler. In other words, they had a board of elders like our church does. Synagogues 2,000 years ago had a board of elders, and there was a chairman of the board and a chairman of the congregation. He undoubtedly was the chairman of the congregation, chairman of the board of elders. Well-respected. Responsible for putting together the weekly service of worship in the synagogue. You think about this man. He was a man of honor. He was a man of dignity. He was so well known in the area that Luke records his name. Jairus. Everybody knew Jairus. Everybody respected him. Respected him for his character, respected him for his faith, for his family, all of these different things. And he's a man of financial means because Luke seems to hint at that he even had servants. Somebody from the house comes to tell him that his daughter has died, perhaps a servant of some kind. So he was a man of wealth, he was a man of honor, he was a man recognized, he was a man of means. And because of who he is, he can approach Jesus openly on the street. Which he does. What about the second person in the story? How different the circumstances. The second person in the story is a woman, which meant 2,000 years ago, she had few rights. She had very few privileges, if much of any. You notice here Luke does not even record her name. Not as a slam against her in any way, but to point to the fact, to highlight the fact that as far as the community is concerned, she doesn't matter. She's a nobody. Her name doesn't count. How different from Jairus. And because of her physical condition, which is described here in the text, verse 43, the woman had a discharge of blood for 12 years running. A hemorrhage, some versions translate it. If you go to the book of Leviticus chapter 15, Moses sets forth the various laws regarding someone in her condition. And the bottom line of Leviticus 15 is anyone in this condition, as this woman is with this hemorrhage of blood, was unclean, and everything she touched became unclean. Everybody she came in contact to was rendered unclean according to the law of Moses in Leviticus. And so Leviticus 15 gives an example, several examples. So Moses says, if she sits in a chair, and then you sit in the same chair, you are ritually unclean. You have to bathe and launder your clothes because you sat in the same chair she had sat in. That's the law of Moses. And so because she was ritually unclean, according to the Old Testament law, she was excluded from all social relationships. If she had been married, she very likely was divorced, in accordance with what Deuteronomy 24 says. The condition that she experienced made having children an impossibility. She was barred from ever going up on the Temple Mount and to enter the temple courts under no condition, because she was an unclean person, could she ever go to temple. She was not allowed on the Sabbath day to go into her local synagogue for a worship service, not allowed in the door. It had been 12 years since anybody had embraced her, either literally or figuratively. And she was alone, and she was dead on the inside. You couldn't have two more different people. Something else about her as well, verse 43. You notice she was impoverished. Medical bills killed her. Does that sound familiar? What does verse 43 say? And you know the Bible has to be inspired if a doctor who's writing this, Dr. Luke, is willing to say this. She spent all her living on physicians and could not be healed by any of them. Now, Luke can't quite bring himself to say what Mark says. Mark puts it even more strongly. He says, this woman suffered much at the hands of doctors, and they only made her condition worse. So you think of this woman. She went to every medical specialist she could go to. She spent everything she had, and after she had spent all of her money, the doctors had made her situation worse. She wasn't cured. She wasn't getting better. She was worse than before she ever walked in the doctor's office the first time. And unlike Jairus, this woman could not approach Jesus openly because she is unclean. She's not supposed to be near or touch anybody. And so she needs to approach Jesus as unobtrusively as possible. But I want you to notice something beautiful in this text. As different as these two individuals were, Luke wants to make sure we tie the two of them together. Not just chronologically, because chronologically their stories overlap. That's very obvious from the text. But he wants us to tie them together theologically. And I want you to notice the brilliant way he does this in this text. All the ways he ties Jairus and this unnamed woman together. Notice how he does it. You notice the number 12. Luke isn't just recording facts out of curiosity. You notice in verse 42, the little girl who's dying is 12 years old. The woman who has the hemorrhage, the issue of blood, has had it for 12 years. Don't miss what Luke is driving at here. You notice both of them fall before Jesus in the text, don't they? Jairus falls before Jesus, verse 41. The woman falls before Jesus, verse 47. You notice the repetition of the word daughter. Jairus had an only daughter. And when Jesus talks to the woman, what does he call her? Don't miss it. He calls her daughter. Verse 48. Both of them are in desperate circumstances. That's evident from the text. Everybody assumes nothing can be done. The crowd assumes nothing can be done for Jairus' daughter. She's dead. It's over. And the physicians that this woman had gone to over 12 years, they all said, there's nothing we can do about your condition. Both of these individuals, both of them, nothing can be done. You notice the emphasis on touching. The woman touches the hem of his garment. Jesus reaches out and touches the little girl. Don't miss the many ways Luke is drawing these two together. Jesus is ceremonially impure. When the woman touches the hem of his garment, he's made unclean, according to the law of Moses. When Jesus touches the corpse of the little girl, he's made unclean, according to the law of Moses. You notice here, when Jesus is present, healing is immediate. It's immediate for the woman. The little girl is immediately raised to life. You notice here there's the response of fear. Verse 47, the woman is afraid. Verse 50, Jairus is afraid. And of course, tying this whole thing together at the very center of the text is that inseparable connection between faith and deliverance and help and salvation. Luke wants us to connect these two theologically, and he makes as many parallels as he possibly can in this short text. Don't miss them. And so in spite of all the differences between these two individuals, Luke highlights the fact that they have a basic similarity. They have a desperate need. There's no human help availing for either one of them. Both of them have heard of Jesus and both come to him and place their faith in him. You notice that in the text. And so by bringing these two accounts together in the way that Luke does here in such a beautiful and brilliant way, Luke is setting forth a powerful spiritual truth. And it's simply this, that on the one hand, being male and ritually pure and honored and wealthy and holding an important office in the community and being respected and a person of means, that doesn't give you any advantage in coming to Jesus Christ. And on the other hand, being female and ritually impure and dishonored and ostracized by the community and poverty-stricken, that's no disadvantage. It's no barrier to receiving the help and mercy of Christ. The only thing that avails is faith in Jesus Christ, no matter who you are. That's the good news of our text. And so I want you to think with me for several minutes about this matter of faith. And I want you to notice with me four characteristics of faith, very briefly, drawn from this text. And the first one is simply this, that it is faith that opens the way for God's power to impact our lives. Not perfect faith, not strong faith, but faith that is centered in the Lord Jesus Christ. And so in this crowd, this frail, trembling woman, impoverished and physically worse off than she'd been 12 years earlier, reaches out her hand and just momentarily, in this massive crowd, manages to just grab the edge of his robe just for a moment. She had no idea that Jesus would know anything about what she did. She thought she could melt back into the crowd. And seemingly, this woman thought there was something magical about what she did. You can kind of sense that in the text, that if she could just touch the garment, there's kind of, you know, some sort of power that automatically transferred to her. She had some mistaken ideas, perhaps. But when Jesus calls her forth, like he does in this text, he wants to make sure that she understands that what was it that made her well? It wasn't some magical touching of the robe. But it was faith alone that saved and healed her. And you see how good it is to know that we don't have to have everything figured out before we can experience the mercies of Christ. And my wife has heard me say it at home many times. Thank God we're not saved by correct theology, but by living faith in Christ. Is correct theology important? Yes. But a person can have some mistaken ideas about all kinds of things, but when that one lays hold of Jesus, that one is delivered. That one is saved. And so her faith is far from perfect, but it's a faith in Jesus. And you think about Jairus. Word comes that his only daughter had died. Verse 50, don't be afraid, only believe. His faith isn't perfect either, is it? He believed, but he struggled. He believed, but he was afraid. He believed, but he doubted. But it was a true faith because as imperfect as it was, it laid hold of Jesus and all of his sufficiency and all of his power and mercy. Faith opens the way for God's power to impact our lives. Number two, faith overcomes obstacles and presses on to Jesus. Did you notice that in the text? And what's the big obstacle in this text for both the woman and for Jairus? It's the same obstacle. It's the crowd. You think about this woman. Okay, so she is ritually unclean. And there's this big crowd around Jesus. You notice when Jesus says, "Who touched me?" Peter's like, "What do you mean, who touched you?" Everybody's jostling you in the crowd. Everybody's elbowing you. You're surrounded by all kinds of people. "What do you mean, who touched you?" Peter says. So how's this woman going to get to Jesus? I mean, the crowd is pressing in tightly. And since she's unclean, okay, if she's going to elbow her way through the crowd, and if she can even make it to Jesus, she's going to make unclean, she's going to defile everybody she brushes against as she pushes through that crowd to Jesus. She's going to contaminate everybody, according to Leviticus 15. So what's she going to do? Is the crowd going to be the barrier where she walks away? Or is she by faith going to press on to Jesus no matter what? Crowd's a barrier. It's an obstacle. You think about Jairus. The crowd is an obstacle too, isn't it? He's come to Jesus. "My daughter's dying." And by dying, he doesn't mean maybe in the next handful of days or weeks. He means like right now. And Jesus says, "I'll go with you." And then the crowd is there. And then this woman stops the procession, stops them going to the house. Every second counts. Every moment counts. You can imagine him trying to hurry Jesus along because the time is critical. You can imagine the growing knot of fear on the inside. You can imagine the anxiety that's grabbed hold of this guy. You know, to put it in modern terms, it's like in a large city, somebody needs to get to the hospital, the ambulance comes, and every second is critical, and the ambulance gets stuck in rush hour traffic. Think of it that way. Jesus needs to get there. Every moment is urgent. The crowd is an obstacle. So now what? I want you to think with me about an interesting and a significant word in verse 42. As Luke describes the crowd, the people, it says, "As Jesus went, the people pressed around him." Your version may have a different word. My English Standard Version uses the word pressed. And the word that it translates, the Greek word that it translates, means to suffocate or to choke. And what makes Luke's word choice significant is that he uses this word only one other time in the gospel. And it's actually in the same chapter, a handful of verses earlier. When Jesus tells the parable about the sower and the seed and the four kinds of soil and faith in him. And you remember as Luke describes, or as Jesus tells the parable, Luke records it, in verse 14, you come to the third kind of soil. And what does Jesus say? The plant of faith never produces fruit because the weeds and thorns and thistles press in upon it. There's the word again. The only two times Luke uses it. Or it chokes out faith. And you notice at the end of the parable, verse 15, true and saving faith, Jesus says, perseveres through whatever obstacle is in the way. Anything that would choke out that growing plant of faith. And so a few verses later, Luke deliberately uses the same word again. It's translated a little differently, but it's the same word. And Luke wants us to connect the story of the sower and the seed with this woman and with Jairus, what he's just said about true faith, a handful of verses earlier. And the question that Luke is raising for us in this passage is, will the crowd choke out this woman's faith? Will the crowd choke out Jairus's faith? Will both of them give way to fear or obstacles and turn away? Or will they press on to Jesus no matter what? Will they persevere? That's the question. True faith overcomes obstacles and presses on to Jesus in spite of what stands in the way, in spite of what others may think or say. Remember, there's a crowd at Jairus' house too. She's only sleeping. What a joke! She's dead. All right, so what's Jairus going to say? All right, I guess it is over, isn't it? Obstacles. Number three, true and living faith is always active, not passive. Luther, in his preface to the book of Romans, writes a beautiful, powerful introduction where he defines all kinds of words that Paul uses in the book of Romans, and one of the words he defines is faith. And Luther says, faith is not simply an idea in the mind that says, I believe this or that or the other thing. That's not true, living, saving faith, says Luther. That's a false faith that never reaches the heart, that never experiences salvation. Faith is not an intellectual thing, but it is a heart trust in faith. And Luther writes this about faith. He says, oh, it is a living, busy, active, mighty thing, this faith. When faith is present, it is active. It is not passive. You think about in the Old Testament, the people of Israel came to the Jordan River under Joshua. And what was it that the Lord said? When the soles of the priests carrying the ark, when the soles of their feet touch the water of the Jordan, then it will divide, not until. Faith doesn't sit there passively on the shore and say, well, let's see, I'm going to wait till the water parts and then maybe I'll step out. We'll see how it goes. Now, faith is something that is active. In the book of Luke, we have seen faith is something that digs through the roof to lower a friend to Jesus. Faith is stretching out a withered hand at the command of Christ. Faith is blind Bartimaeus by the road who's shouting out, Jesus, Son of Nazareth, have mercy on me. And the crowd says, shut up. You're bothering everybody. And he shouts out all the louder, all the more. Faith is active. It knocks, it begs, it touches, it persists, it cries, it clings. Faith is active. It's not passive. And then finally, number four, faith believes that Jesus is sufficient to help us in our need, as desperate as it may be. How often it is that desperation and trials drive us to Jesus, don't they? We see this with Jairus. We see this with the unnamed woman in this text. And there in the midst of their utter helplessness, in the midst of their utter vulnerability, they find the power and they find the grace of Jesus. And I want you to notice something beautiful about this woman in this text. Luke highlights the fact that although her medical problem is cured instantly by the touching of the hem of the garment, there's still more healing that she needs. Did you notice that in the text? In other words, her deepest problem is not her physical affliction, but it's her isolation from others. It's spiritual things, emotional things. And so Jesus doesn't call her forth to embarrass her, but he calls her forth so that he can fully restore her in every way. Did you notice that? And so by calling her forth, and she tells the story exactly of what transpired, she's clean, she's whole. He restores her to her neighbors. He restores her to the community. Next Sabbath day, she can go to synagogue again for the first time in 12 years. He restores her in this beautiful way. And above all else, he restores her spiritually. You notice that by his grace, by the grace of adoption, he embraces her in the family of God. And what does he call her? He calls her daughter. A child of the King. Daughter. Your faith has made you well. And so this woman who came with turmoil and fear, woman living in isolation and poverty and rejection, Jesus says, peace be with you. Take my peace with you. Now as you go your way. Talk about restoration. How much more than just the physical healing. And so whatever your need is today, let me just end with this. The Jesus that Luke portrays here and everywhere in the gospel is one who is all-powerful. He is the resurrection and the life, Jairus' daughter. He's the one who welcomes and cleanses needy and broken people, this unnamed woman in the text. The Lord Jesus is here to heal your uncleanness, your sin. He's here to fill you with resurrection life. So the question is, will you come to him in faith? Let's pray together.